When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Playlist Podcast, a weekly discussion of films and TV. I'm your host, Charles Barfield, managing editor of the Playlist. And for this episode, I have yet another interview I'd like to share with you folks. Recently, I got a chance to speak with Eddie Wong, the writer-director of the new coming-of-age drama Boogie. And if you're not familiar with the name Eddie Wong, then you have a lot of catching up to do. Well, not really, but I'll help. He's a true definition of a multi-hyphenate in Hollywood. We're talking someone that is a famous chef and restaurateur. If you live in New York and you haven't been to Bauhaus, you're crazy. He's an author of a best-selling memoir, which was turned into a critically acclaimed sitcom fresh off the boat, though he's not really a big supporter of the TV show for various reasons. He'll get into it in the interview a little bit. Wong is also a TV show host of travel and cooking shows. I got to mention RIP Snack Off, which is an underrated show. And now he's the writer-director of a feature film, Boogie. And according to Wong, all that other stuff has been leading to the making of Boogie and his arrival as a feature filmmaker. Boogie's currently in theaters and heading to VOD later this week. And for anyone who has seen the film, you know the writer-director clearly poured his heart and soul into the making of the coming-of-age film. Boogie tells the story of an Asian-American teen trying to secure a big basketball scholarship while also attempting to woo the girl of his dreams and also navigate an incredibly tumultuous relationship with his parents at home. And it's that last bit about the parents that hits hardest for Wong. Just a quick warning to listeners, Wong does go into his real-life trauma and family struggles that included abuse over the course of the interview. It's not easy to hear, but also it's crucial to understanding why Boogie is such a meaningful film for him. And listening to him speak about his own childhood paints the full picture of the movie and helps you appreciate just what he was trying to do. But before I throw it to that interview, I got to tell you the Playlist Podcast is part of the Playlist Podcast Network, which includes Be Real, The Fourth Wall, Deep Focus, and more. And if you want to find us, you can check your podcast app of choice, whether that's Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Spotify, Anchor, Stitcher, or anywhere else you find your favorite shows. So with that all out of the way, here's my recent interview with Eddie Wong, the writer-director of Boogie. Enjoy. I want to welcome Eddie Wong to the Playlist Podcast. Thanks for joining us to talk about Boogie.
Of course. Thanks for having me, Charles.
So right off the bat, Boogie is a coming-of-age film about a Chinese-American teen trying to juggle his desire for a quote-unquote normal American life with the expectations of his Chinese heritage and controlling parents. And the film definitely succeeds at presenting that. But for me, Boogie's always going to go down as the film that taught me the best pickup line of all time, "You have a pretty vagina." So please tell me that is something you pulled from your childhood.
I watched somebody, a good friend of mine, say that to a girl, and I was like, bro, what are you doing? And it was insane, and somehow the woman didn't slap him, but she was like, ew. And then they started a conversation, and I didn't like that it ended up in a conversation, you know, like I felt like the girl should have just walked away from my friend, but he did it in a funny way. You know, he did it in a funny way. Not that it's funny or it's, I don't know. Like I thought it was terrible. And I was like, dude, what are you doing? And he's like, it worked. And this is like probably 2007, 2008. I really don't think it works today.
No.
And so that we played it differently in the film. You know, obviously the girls walk away, they're bored by it. And yeah, you know, but it was something I saw an Asian friend of mine do. And I put it in because I felt in the moment watching my friend do it, I was like, I feel like he's overcompensating for not feeling like a man sometimes, you know, because Asian men are really emasculated in American society. And we're always told that we're like weaker and smaller and all these things that we deal with later on in the film. But I wanted to start off the film and with this character, with this Asian guy trying too hard and overcompensating. And you see his arc develop and change, because he begins trying to be really strong and really tough and really funny and the star basketball player, all of the like toxic masculine traits that we've come to find in some athletes. But through his relationship, through his courtship of Eleanor, he realizes that the key to it is actually his wounds and his vulnerability and his sensitivity.
Yeah, definitely. And I bring up the line because it's hilarious. And it's one of those moments where you just watch it. And it, like you said, it's funny because he's kind of charming, but it's also like, whoa, bro, like, what are you doing, man? Like,
yeah.
And it kind of speaks to this film for me, where a lot of people are going to know you from Fresh Off the Boat, the memoir, and then of course the ABC show. So that sitcom ran for several years based on your memoir, like I said. And you have been vocal in like kind of calling it out, not as a terrible show, but it's just like this PG version of the Asian American experience in the US. So Boogie's definitely not a PG movie.
No.
And so my question is do you look at Boogie as kind of this sort of like quote unquote more real depiction of the Asian American experience that you know of it? Or is this just kind of, you're presenting a spectrum where Fresh Off the Boat's on one end and Boogie's kind of on the R-rated other end?
Well, you know, I really don't think about Fresh Off the Boat much. I it was just done. You know, the book I think is phenomenal and it's really changed. I think it's really changed the culture and awareness of Asian identity in America. So I'm very proud of the book. I don't watch the show. But Boogie, if we focus on Boogie, Boogie is really realistic, you know, and like there's a lot of scenes like the one you identified where he says, "You got a pretty vagina." I mean, that's an awkward line. It's really difficult. And I know certain audiences may not like it. Me and the studio talked about it forever. And, you know, there were times where I was scared about putting that scene out there. I actually took it out in my director's cut and was focused. I had the confidence in me and in that scene. I was like, dude, that's important. Like, you shot that scene for a reason. You wrote that scene for a reason. Like, put it out there. And I'm really glad that we did, because it's challenging. And you can write a film and you can make the protagonist likable from the beginning. You know, a lot of times in rom-coms, the flaws that you give people, they're not really flaws. They're very endearing. They're picking.
She's almost too pretty.
Yeah, you know, and like, you know, with Boogie, I was like, I'm going to let him make these mistakes. You know, let's let him trip over himself, because that's kind of more real, just in real life, not even just to Asian America, but to just teenage boys in general. Like, we stink in everything.
Isn't that the truth? So you mentioned like the coming of age aspect of this, and in the, there's a scene early in the movie also that stuck out for me, where Boogie's talking in his English class and he's there reading Catcher in the Rye. And he makes the comment like, you know, this isn't representative of, you know, his own life. Like, why do we have to read these books? And it kind of sounds like it's a bit of a meta commentary on film, TV, pop culture, growing up as an Asian American, you know, not seeing yourself represented. So when you write that line pointing to this, and you're making this movie, which is very clearly a coming of age movie, are you adding pressure to yourself to be like, okay, now I definitely have to like raise the bar on representation?
No, I don't, because honestly, like, I didn't know what like Hollywood Reporter, Variety, or Deadline were until like 2016 when I moved out here, you know. And you go to your agent's office and then you see like big magazines, and I was like, oh, you know, what are these things, you know? And so I'm not.
They're like, you better learn this real quick.
Yeah, I'm not really in the matrix. You know, like when we have box office stuff, I'll go check Deadline and see what's up with the box office. But otherwise, I'm not like Malcolm and Marie. You know what I mean? I think that movie was quite aware, and like so much of it is about critics and things. I've become more aware of critics since this movie came out. But like, you know, and some of it like bothers you, but it's like, it's whatever, you know. That scene in Catcher in the Rye really is just my feeling about the American education system. You know, like, you really don't learn about a lot of the formative things that made this country what it is, that, you know, not only made this country what it is, but also created a foundation that we're still trying to untangle. You know, there's just terrible things that have happened here. And I remember, again, I'll go back to Good Will Hunting, is you know, I remember when he shouted out like, oh, Howard Zinn's People History of the United States of America. That's a book you should read. And I remember when it got assigned to us, the teacher in school was like, this is the book Will Hunting mentions. I was like, oh shit, I'm going to pay attention to this book. So I read it and I paid attention. And so in a way, one of my favorite scenes is when Boogie and Richie are playing Monopoly Deal and Richie shouts out Junot Diaz Oscar Wow. And that was my way of being like, look, pay attention to this book. And I hope some kid watches the movie and then ends up in a bookstore and sees Oscar Wilde. I was like, you know what? I'm going to read that book. I remember Eddie shouted that out and Boogie, I'm going to read it because that book changed my life. And my experience in school was just, there were not many books I read I related to. And there was always some like white teacher at the front of the class that was like, this book is amazing or you're going to love it. And it was like, you know, I couldn't connect, you know? I couldn't connect. It was so far from my experience. And it's always like in high school, especially public high school, you're bombarded with books by white writers. And all the questions you have about life and existence and society, the only things you get to read and kind of collide with are white voices. And I thought that was super fucked up as a kid. You know, like if we have such a diverse society, we should really be making more of an effort to include like Latin writers and Black writers and Chinese, Asian writers in the curriculum, you know, LGBTQ writers. Like, you know, why do we have to wait till graduate school to read James Baldwin? You know, you should be reading James Baldwin in high school, or Booker T. Washington, all these things, you know?
Yeah, definitely. I agree. So switching gears a little bit here, I think one of the most startling aspects of the movie for myself was the relationship between Boogie's parents. It's hard to say the least. Like it's a tough watch sometimes to watch their scenes. They're very antagonistic towards each other. And first, I got to say the actors involved nailed it. They're great.
Yeah.
And deserve some sort of recognition for sure. But did you ever worry that showing this sort of relationship between parents was maybe even too toxic and that maybe you had to take a step back from the intensity a little bit?
No, this is such an interesting question. You were the first person to ask this question, and it's such a good question because this was my biggest blind spot making the film, and I'm glad I had this blind spot because originally there was even more abuse. You know, like the parents actually fight and the dad hits Mrs. Chin. That's what I experienced. That's what I know. That's what a lot of kids know. And I think cinema, I really think cinema is about pointing the camera at things that you see truth in, that you see honesty in, that you feel other people should see as well. And that perhaps they have not seen. They did not turn that rock over. I experienced all of these things in the film, but to a much more violent extent. You know, like police actually came to my house. At one point, we were almost separated from my parents. Me and my brother would go to school. We had to take our shirts off. And they would check if we had marks. I mean, I was like in programs all the time. Like it was tough, man. It was really, really tough. And because my dad made money and we had a big house, like we moved to a big house in high school. We had not been in a big house before then. But once he made money, it was almost like, well, you can't say anything. And I really struggled with it. And I wrote about this a lot in Fresh Off the Boat, is that everyone was like, oh, you have great parents. You're so lucky. Your life's amazing because your dad made money. And it almost like washed over everything that happened in terms of other people's perspective of my father and our family. But for me, I was still really hurt. And I was really hurt for my mom, myself, my brothers, and I didn't want to suture that. And I also felt like it was toned down so much. And in part, that was because Focus and my producers told me like, hey, I think it's going to be really hard to redeem this Mr. Chin character if you show any more violence. Like, he's going to have to go back to jail. He's going to have to die. Something bad is going to have to happen to him. I'm like, well, that didn't happen to my dad, you know? And I don't think necessarily about how the audience is going to feel. I'm very much, in terms of characters and arcs, I think about it in a documentary way. Like, what have I seen happen in this world? Because I don't want to perpetuate false narratives. The real narrative is, for a lot of kids that get abused, your dad is still your dad, your mom is still your mom. You find a way to love them, and you find a way to believe that they love you. That's what this story is about. Because I was an abused kid. Really fucking terrible things happened to me. It was always written off as discipline, or this is how Taiwanese people raise their kids, or Chinese people raise their kids. But even going to Taiwan, a lot of the kids I met, their parents did fight, but not to the extent my parents did. You know, it was just bad. It was terrible. It was very, very difficult to grow up with. And my aunts and uncles knew. They would check in and they'd be like, oh, how's it going over at the house? Like, what do you fucking think?
Yeah.
And nobody helped it. Nobody helped us out. So
wow.
The most anyone did was, I watched Good Will Hunting with my aunt, and all she did was check in. Are you okay? I mean, same fucking shit, aunt. You know, like, it's tough, man. It's tough. It's very, you know, what's even tougher is reading the reviews and people saying like, oh, who would want to watch this film? This is a melodramatic family. They don't even love each other. This is so difficult. I'm like, do you guys think for one second that maybe people actually live these lives? You know, like, I'm depicting my reality, and you're now mad at me for depicting my reality and not making it more entertaining for you. And I'm like, where's the empathy? And so I stopped reading reviews, because I just realized, well, while I made this film so that other people and other kids that grew up like me can feel less alien, hearing people's response just continues to affirm my alienness and my strangeness. So I stopped reading it, and I just watch a lot of, like, I'll watch a lot of Cassavetes films. I watch old, you know, like, Edward Yang films or Tai Ming Liang films, Rebels of the Neon God. I mean, like, when I watch those films, I feel less weird. You know, there's a bull throwing scene in Rebels of the Neon God, and that's kind of what I settled on for this film. Because originally written, it didn't just end with a bull being thrown. It ends with Mrs. Chin being dragged across the floor by her hair, you know?
Right.
But then Focus, you know, made a good point. How do you redeem that character? And I was like, I mean, the way I did in the end, but it doesn't check out. That only checks out for me.
Yeah. I mean, you know? you bring up a good point, like this whole alienation sort of feeling, you know, coming of age movies by and large are supposed to speak to you and supposed to depict like real coming of age. If it's not, then it's just fantasy at that point. So, yeah.
Yeah. One of my favorite films is Guide to Recognizing Your Saints.
Right.
And even my best friends have watched it with me. And my best friend is our executive producer, Rafael Martinez. And he's like, Eddie, like, that's a tough film to watch. I'm like, really? He's like, yeah, really, bro. It's very difficult to watch. That is a painful film to watch. And I'm like, oh, reminds me a lot of my family and a lot of my friends. And he's like, yeah, I know. And, you know, it's just a conundrum as a writer director, when it's like, you want to reflect your reality, and your reality is so strange to other people.
Yeah. And then, like you said, you have studios saying someone, maybe not Focus, but other films are clearly, studios will say like, hey, you know, you got to appeal to the four demos and, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah. The four quadrants. And you know, I will say this though. I say everything about Focus positively. Like, and I don't have to protect them. You know, like, I've shit on a lot of places I've worked. I really appreciated Focus because they were trying to protect me. And they were trying to, reveal a blind spot to me. Like, Eddie, they never once were like, this isn't your experience. They acknowledged, like, they're like, this clearly is this kid's experience. He's writing it with such specific detail. But this also isn't a documentary. And we need for people to come to this film and hear everything you have to say. We cannot just put them in your family's house. And I think that really encapsulates a lot of the struggle I've had in telling stories, is everyone I work with has a lot of empathy and sympathy for what I went through, but it's like, we don't necessarily need to go there. We can get the knowledge and the wisdom and the tour through Asian America without you dragging us through your family's shit. And I can understand that.
Yeah.
I understand that. I'm learning, you know, I'm going to figure it out, but I'm learning.
Hey, I mean, it's a hell of a first film for sure to break into. So I think it's great. It's definitely raw for sure, but it's like you said, it feels very real. Like there's no doubt watching this movie that you're like, okay, this is the white writer director speaking through his characters. Like this is true to life. Yeah. This isn't melodrama, like a soap opera or something like that. That's never the feeling.
For sure.
So changing gears a little bit here, I want to talk about a scene that I thought was kind of like touching in a weird way. There's a scene where Boogie's dad's showing him a recording of Michael Chang winning the French Open in 89. And this is happening, not the scene, but the French Open is happening during the Tiananmen Square stuff. And he says that this is like the greatest achievement in Asian American history. At first, Boogie's like, what the hell are you talking about? But is that something that you actually, I assume you heard, and is this something that you look at as like, yeah, this is an under the radar moment in Asian American history?
Yeah, you know, my dad loved Michael Chang. Everyone loved Michael Chang. It was me that actually said, I think this is the greatest moment in Asian American history, because I remember how embarrassed and ashamed we were of Tiananmen. And that really affected us. And, you know, we're very proud to be from China. I'm really proud of our culture and our history. I learn a lot from it, and it's held me down in so many ways. Like when I feel really lost, I'll go read like the Tao Te Ching, you know, I will go read like ancient Chinese texts. And I really think there's something special that our civilization has figured out about life and existence and ideas about family. They're really cool. But when I saw Tiananmen and I saw the way the government was treating its own people, I was like, whoa, like, and I was 7. I was like, how did it come to this? You know, like, how is this happening? And I remember just being totally embarrassed and I not wanting to go to school, because kids, even when I was like 5 or 6, I still remember kids being like, you guys are communists, you know, like. There was always that joke, like in the 80s, like, you guys are communists and, you know, yada, yada, yada. And kids, none of us knew what communism meant. It was just that you were bad. You're communist. We're democratic and you're communist. And when I saw Tiananmen, I was like, man, they're all going to make fun of me on Monday, you know? Wow. Yeah. And the next day, Michael Chang wins. And it was like there was something to be proud of. And I do feel it was a very defining moment of my childhood, because after, like, in the day the Tiananmen happened, there was a lot of self-hate and there was like self-reflection and just like, man, do I have to be Chinese? Like, I'm in America. Like, why do I have to be Chinese? Why do we try so hard? Why do we go to Chinese school on the weekends? Like, why do we only speak Chinese at home? And I was like, I don't get being Chinese.
Right.
It felt like a burden. But then literally the next day, seeing Michael Chang win, I was like, well, he's pretty cool. Maybe there's something to this being Chinese. And the way that he fought through it was so Taiwanese Chinese. Like, he had cramps. He was smaller. He was the underdog. Nobody believed in him. He had no business standing across from Ivan Lendl. And then he outwitted him. He didn't beat him with physicality. He like underhand served, stood at the service line, like pulled out every trick in the bag. And even as a kid, I was like, wow, that was like the Chinese way. You know what I mean? Like, just refuse to lose and use your wit. And I just thought it was amazing. That is, to me, the defining moment of like my Asian American experience. You know, it was like, because I made a decision. I was like, it's cool to be Chinese.
That's awesome. Yeah, I think we're roughly the same age. So I obviously don't have the same sort of like memory that you have of that. But I do remember the Michael Chang phenomenon. It was just more of I looked at it as a sports fan than as this like cultural achievement. But that's awesome. So I got to wrap up with you. But I want to ask you now, obviously, you've written a book. The book was turned into a TV show. You've done TV of your own. Got to shout out your travel shows. Those are awesome. But also now you're a writer director doing feature films. So like, where are you going now? You're a multi-hyphenate. Are you going to do Snack Off? Let's do Snack Off. Like, what's next? You know,
my favorite thing is writing and directing film. You know, that is what I love to do. That's what I want to do. This is where I've always wanted to be. You know, I did everything else to get here and make this film. And, you know, I have an animated show, Chinos, at HBO Max that's coming out that I'm really excited about. And I wrote a bunch of other features. So I'll just be selling the features and moving on. But I'm really excited to just keep making movies.
That's awesome. And
I learned a lot this first time.
Yeah, I want to thank you for joining me. And also, I got to quickly mention before I let you go, thank you for turning me into onto Despot. Despot.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so he plays the assistant coach in the movie, just real quick for people listening. And I was just fascinated by his performance. I thought it was just so interesting that I Googled him after. And then I saw like, oh man, he makes music and it's really good. So anybody out there who's just as wow, definitely check him out. So
yo, Despot is the man. And you know, it's funny. I've been friends with Despot for a very long time. I know him from a long time. I can't really say how I know him, but I know him. And he's like a Queens legend, you know, like cats from Queens all know him. He'd been in the scene for a long time. And he was just visiting set. And he was visiting set. And I was like, yo, it would be hilarious if you were the assistant coach, just like following around Dom. And he was, I wrote all his lines on the spot.
That's awesome.
In the scenes, because he was not cast. That character was not written. He was just hanging around. I'm like, this would be hilarious. So I threw him in. And he got in there and he just did it. And we had a lot of fun.
Yeah, you can tell. So yeah. You definitely tell. And also, just as a personal note, I gotta say, when they're eating at Bauhaus, that really hit me hard. We love that restaurant. So yeah.
And I hope that more directors give Despot a chance. He's phenomenal, you know. And he's got a show called Chillin' Island coming out. The executive producer of Wong's World that created Wong's World with me, David Lehman, he's producing Despot's show. So we stick together. It's like a little family of us.
Again, I want to thank you for talking about Boogie, and everybody go check out the film. It's hitting VOD this week. I believe it's still in theaters. I know you're out in LA promoting it in theaters recently, so that's awesome. And and again, I got to mention Snack Off. If you want to make me and my wife happy, bring back Snack Off.
All right, man. Thank you, Charles. Right. Have a great day.
You too, man. Have a good one.
Take care.